From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm your host, Jenna Gibson. A couple of weeks ago here at KEI, we hosted an event as part of our academic symposium that we do every year entitled Understanding North Korea's Outreach in 2018, in which we focused on the diplomatic outreach that North Korea has been doing since the beginning of this year, starting from Kim Jong-un's New Year's Day speech through the Pyeongchang Olympics, and of course the summits, both the inter-Korean summit and the upcoming meeting with Trump and Kim. As part of that event, one of our speakers was Inna Jo, who is an assistant editor with the ASEAN Forum, and she gave a really interesting presentation about how PR plays into Kim Jong-un's strategy when it comes to this diplomatic outreach campaign. So, of course, when it comes to North Korea, we're not used to hearing the word PR. We're used to hearing propaganda, or, you know, people are analyzing propaganda. And, of course, it's true. North Korea does use a lot of propaganda. But it was really interesting to hear Inna talk about some of these issues from a PR perspective. And, you know, what is his goal? How is he using his, you know, appearances and the people that he's sending to these events? How is that playing into the image that he's trying to cultivate? So with that in mind, I wanted to sit down with her and talk a little bit about her research and talk about her presentation. So please enjoy this conversation. The papers from this panel, including this one, will be forthcoming. We're going to have one of our main journals, the Joint U.S.-Korea Academic Studies Journal, should be coming out this summer, and I'll keep you guys posted on that. But in the meantime, please enjoy my conversation with Inna Jo. So thank you so much for coming all the way to KEI and writing this really great paper for us, and then, of course, for sticking around for the podcast as well.
Thank you.
So one thing I found was really interesting because I am the director of communications. My job is PR, right? Mm-hmm. So you talked a lot about Kim Jong-un's PR and the way that he's presenting himself to the world. So can you start off with a little bit of an overview of what is Kim Jong-un doing that is so different from what we've seen with the previous leaders of North Korea?
So Kim Jong-un, even though he does follow the broader sort of public relations rubrics that are set forth by his grandfather and father, promotes an image that is distinctly modern. He wants himself and the country to be seen as prosperous, modern, open, global. This doesn't mean that he actually undertakes political changes, but he makes significant references to being open and global in his speeches and public addresses that suggest that he wants to be seen as such, even if it isn't actually true.
So to what extent do you see this, you know, PR messaging or, you know, trying to be seen as modern and global, how much is that for his domestic audience and how much of that is for the international audience and how does he balance that?
To me, I think the image of openness and modernity is primarily targeted at his international audience, but he doesn't make that distinction very explicitly. So even when he takes public messaging initiatives toward his domestic audience, there is an image of youth that he likes to promote. Something that he does, for instance, having his wife accompany him everywhere he goes, that promotes the idea of a modern couple. The fact that instead of wearing those military uniforms, he likes to wear Western suits, that also signals, you know, I'm young, I am modern, I'm global. I think if the idea of his youth was once an obstacle to him being a legitimate heir to the throne, it's now something that he actively promotes in his public messaging. For his international audience, it's quite obvious he wants to be seen as modern. The fact that his economic development projects are all geared toward building luxury establishments, which are targeted at attracting foreign currency from tourists, it shows to me that he wants to be seen as prosperous and sends across that message that, you know, North Korea is doing well in spite of what the external forces are doing to us.
Yeah, that's something that we were talking about actually just yesterday here at KEI, you know, talking amongst ourselves, because they had announced that Kim Jong-un's wife would be referred to as the First Lady now. And that was, you know, a term that hasn't been used for a very long time. And so I see what you mean in terms of, you know, bringing his wife with him, but also calling her the First Lady, which is a very, you know, Western or democratic term for the wife of the president or the, mm-hmm. you know, spouse of the president. Mm-hmm. So that's really interesting to hear you say that. It's not a new thing, or it's part of this trend as well. So it seems like here and there, and, you know, this has been a trend for a while in his PR, he's trying to seem like more modern, more youthful. But then at the beginning of this year, there was a tidal wave of these new diplomatic outreach, the North Korean participation in the Pyeongchang Olympics. We had him sending his sister, Kim Yo-jong, as his, you know, representative to those Olympics. And now we have these summits as well. So do you see this as a big change or shift, or is it a ramping up of this PR messaging, or how do you interpret this new outreach in 2018?
So there are two layers to it, I think. The diplomatic outreach is one thing, and then the public relations efforts that he undertakes in order to facilitate that is another. His participation at the Pyeongchang Olympics is the latter. In my opinion, he wanted to use this opportunity to send across the message that, you know, I'm willing to engage, I'm willing to participate in this event of peace. And this, all of that allows him to move toward his broader strategic goal, which is, well, in the short term, diplomacy, and in the longer term, perhaps peace. Although obviously opinions vary on that.
So continuing on this topic, because you mentioned something in your presentation earlier that I found really interesting, was the role of women in this outreach. Of course, we had Hyun Sung-woo, and then his wife, of course, has been going. He went with him to Beijing. She was, you know, featured very prominently. Kim Yo-jong. And I mean, even on the South Korean side, when they sent their musicians, it was primarily female musicians who went. So what do you see as the role of women in these recent diplomatic outreach?
I think he sends his female envoys to challenge existing narratives about the regime. And these existing narratives include that the regime is poor, that it's depraved, that it's culturally and politically male-dominated. You see pictures of North Korean cabinet, and it's, you know, all male. And so people internationally have the idea that the regime is run by men, and men like Kim Jong-un, who is, you know, thought to be irrational, crazy, impatient, brash. So by sending women who are trained to smile and to charm, he challenges those narratives. I think Hyun Sung-woo is a great example. She was handpicked by Kim Jong-un to lead the Moranbong Band, which is probably North Korea's first modern pop group. And, you know, when you look at their debut, they came out in short skirts and high heels and, you know, singing Disney themes. They weren't praising the revolution or the leader. They were, you know, singing renditions of Rocky. So that sort of signals Kim's embrace of globalism and modernity. And Hyun Sung-woo is at the center of that. She's also rumored to have been Kim's ex-mistress. And also that she was executed for making pornographic videos. So by sending her to Pyeongchang, what I think Kim Jong-un was trying to do was to say, hey, all your stories and reports about North Korea, they can be wrong. And we also have beautiful and empowered women like Hyun Sung-woo representing the state.
So obviously, with this, you know, PR campaign or showing this desire to be seen as global or modern, you know, we see that a lot. But in the end, if you look past the PR, it's not particularly global, not particularly modern in North Korea. So at what point do you think that, you know, how far can that PR go when the baseline or the truth is that they're not necessarily those things? So how, especially once we get past, you know, these summits into more like serious negotiations, do you think that the Kim regime will have to grapple with that, you know, paradox in their messaging?
So you're completely right. Despite all these public relations efforts, there is very little evidence to suggest that they're, you know, they translate to meaningful political changes. For as long as Kim Jong-un's diplomatic outreach lasts, these image-making operations will continue. But there have been reports of, you know, people not believing what he says. And I think that is something that the Kim regime is having difficulty dealing with. It may also explain in part why the regime propaganda machinery is undertaking some limited transparency measures to not, you know, go out there and claim these radical positions that are going to be proven untrue very quickly.
No, I found it really interesting you mentioned this, and I had forgotten, but for the first time recently, North Korea acknowledged that one of its missile tests had failed. So what was the rationale behind that, or why were they able to acknowledge a failure when that's not really within the usual playbook of North Korean propaganda?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is just my opinion. I think there is growing dissatisfaction within the North Korean people, maybe not dissatisfaction, maybe distrust among the North Korean people about all the claims that the regime's propaganda machinery is promoting. And that's why there have been some very limited transparency measures that have been undertaken, and a lot of them are actually credited to his sister, Kim Yo-jung, who's the de facto chief propagandist for the country. When the regime, when the regime came out and said that one of their missile tests had failed, it was something unprecedented, but it's something that they could get away with. But essentially what it comes down to is I think the regime recognizes that there is growing distrust among the North Korean people, and so they're undertaking limited transparency measures to remake the image of the propaganda machinery. And that's to say, we're open, we're transparent, we're not feeding you lies. And they can do that by at least admitting one of its missile tests going wrong. Another good example of that openness is how it broadcasted the, you know, the demise of Chang Song-taek, which is not very common in the North Korean regime when somebody gets purged internally. And someone so important as Chang Song-taek, it usually doesn't happen with so much publicity around it. But they were very open about it, and it came with pretty significant amount of rationalizing.
So as we get closer to both the Kim Moon summit, and then, of course, we will at some point maybe have a Trump-Kim summit. They're still working out the details. But how do you see the North Koreans reaching out, or do you see the North Koreans doing much messaging to either the South Korean public or the American public as we get closer to having those leaders meet? I haven't seen much, but is it kind of, are they just relying on what they've already done and the fact that they're meeting at all? Or how do you see them messaging this, these upcoming meetings?
I think probably an easy answer is that he banks on the momentum that he already built through his participation in Pyeongchang. And there have been some cultural exchanges between the North and the South, and depending on what happens in the next Kim Moon summit, they are, you know, likely to continue. So once the summit has taken place and there have been some agreements on some of these symbolic gestures like family reunions, I'm sure there will be more public messaging initiatives coming from the North.
All right, so we are running out of time, but I want to ask you or give you the chance if there's something that I haven't asked and you think it's important to know from your paper or from your presentation. Is there anything that you want people to know about the recent diplomatic outreach of North Korea in 2018?
I think I just want to wrap up by highlighting why public relations strategy is important for Kim Jong-un. In my paper, I focus on both the domestic and international objectives that he tries to achieve using his image-making initiatives. But at the end of the day, it comes down to his strategic goal, which is the survival of his regime. So domestically, you know, for a closed economy, authoritarian regime like North Korea, image making is immensely important, and there's no doubt about that. Internationally, people ask, why undertake this? And we've seen from, you know, the entire history of North Korean diplomatic initiatives that oftentimes when the Kim family extends an olive branch or undertakes these image-making operations, it helps them gain, you know, huge substantive and symbolic rewards from both their allies and also their adversaries. And these rewards are incredibly important, not just for public sustenance, but also to help pay for all the luxuries of the elites whose deference Kim relies on to sustain his regime. So while public relations initiatives are just that, it's just making of Kim's image, they do have a more strategic value.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you, everyone, for listening here again on Korean Context. Please do feel free to subscribe, of course, and leave us your thoughts. Let us know what you think of this conversation or about our podcast in general. And we'll see you here next time with another great episode.